Welcome to the Commentary Magazine Daily Podcast. Today is Monday, April 24th, 2023. I am John Podhoretz, the editor of Commentary Magazine. With me, as always, executive editor Abe Greenwald. Hi, Abe.
Hi, John.
Media commentary columnist Christine Rosen. Hi, Christine. Christine, you're on mute. No one heard you say hi, John. You have to say hi, John.
Hi, John. Sorry. I'm only on my first cup of coffee. My apologies. Okay.
It's our ritualistic opening. And Christine's colleague at the American Enterprise Institute, our Washington commentary columnist, Matthew Continetti. Hi, Matt.
A double hi to you, John, for me and Christine.
That's great. Thank you. It's like a double portion of manna. Here, as we traverse the 40 years in the wilderness that may be extended in the wilderness, as Joe Biden is apparently about to declare his reelection campaign tomorrow, I think, in a video, and maybe it'll be partly a video and partly a speech. I don't really know. And of course, I think he begins this race as the favorite. So batten down the hatches and buckle up, because we could be taking quite a ride with this one man who is a combination of both sunshine boys, including with their increasing mental infirmity, aside from the lack of Jewishness. I bring this up only to say that there's a whole lot of talk about how Biden is infirm and Biden is in bad shape and Democrats don't want him to run again, and 70% of them don't want him to run again, and no one's ever polled like this on a reelect where they don't want him to run again. And I don't even know what any of this means, because if no Democrat is going to actually, aside from Robert F. Kennedy Jr., whose main source of support now appears to be among Steve Bannon anti-vax psychotics and the like, if no one is going to run against him, what does it matter whether 70% of Democrats would rather he not run again? What is the issue there, that they're not going to have sufficient enthusiasm for him? Nobody had enthusiasm for him in 2020 and he got 81 million votes. So help me out here. Why are we dwelling on this?
Well, when it might not be a big issue in the primary, but lack of enthusiasm could conceivably hurt him in a general election. But I do want to spend one moment on RFK Jr. I actually think he's an undervalued stock right now. There are a lot of conspiracy theorists in this country. They're in both parties. But if you listen to some of RFK Jr.'s rhetoric, he's also kind of taken on some of the Bernie-style anti-corporate issues. He's kind of taking on, he's where he is he's kind of in the Tulsi Gabbard, Tucker Carlson, Naomi Wolf place, where left and right bend toward each other at the extremes. And I think there's a potential audience for that in the Democratic primary, of people who don't like Biden, want an alternative, like the Kennedy name. And he's not an embarrassment as a public speaker either. So I would just watch him. I don't think he's going to win the nomination by any means, but I think he could pose a little bit of worry among Democrats in the coming months.
I'm glad Matt brought that up. I don't know how far down this we want to go, but I feel the same way, especially after sort of looking at responses to him all weekend on social media. We're at a stage in our political culture where I think the crowd that Matt described and that John characterized, this sort of fringy, paranoid, populist, conspiracy theory, like they have something like a seat at the table now in a way that they didn't before. I agree. It's not that he's not poised to do something remarkable. But I think he represents that part of the population, I think, in a new way. It affects our politics in a more direct way than it used to.
I like to believe that in a weird way, because then it would mean that the toxicity of this disease wasn't exclusive to the Republican Party, and that therefore this was a national trend rather than a partisan trend. I just think that though people say that they want someone else to run again, I don't think they want RFK Jr. to be the person running. Otherwise, he would be polling higher than 2%. What they want is for a generic Democrat who isn't Biden and doesn't have Biden's obvious disadvantages or infirmities to be the candidate. Maybe there is an ideological component to that, though it's a little hard to tell. And I think voters are savvy enough to understand that some of the things that people were saying about Biden toward the end of the election cycle in 2022 were in fact correct, which is that he managed to get things done on the liberal side of the ledger that in 2021 it looked like he would not get done. He has a record of service to them, not only legislatively, but also in a lot of these administrative acts and executive orders and decisions like that, particularly as relates to social issues. It's going to be very hard. I don't know what the criticism is going to be of Biden. When Pat Buchanan ran against George H.W. Bush in 1992 and had this, you know, surprise showing in New Hampshire, he went right at Bush. The economy was in bad shape. He was not a fan of the war, the first Gulf War. And he had a sotto voce populist audience that responded to him in this very small state. So the only way you can really pop against a sitting president is you have to say he's bad. Like, but it's
they
not
can.
Like, yeah.
But they won't do it on policy, I don't think. I think what they're, and we saw a little hint of this from the New York Times editorial page this weekend, which very gently said, you know, Biden really needs to reassure us Americans that he's cognitively up to the challenge. I think they did even use the word cognitive, correct me if I'm wrong. But they are expressing very quietly, like, we're all worried, this is the 70% speaking, we don't know if you're up to the job. A savvy Democrat, two things. One, a savvy Democrat, a Gavin Newsom type, can kind of challenge him on the vigor standpoint without challenging the policy. But the other outlier, the other sort of the wild card in this is Kamala. I will be very curious to see her role in that re-announcement video tomorrow. What is her role? Will she be standing beside him? Are we going to get a reboot of the Biden-Harris administration? Because that's disappeared. They know she's pretty much going to weigh down a ticket, not boost it. I'll be very curious to see what her role is going to be in all of this.
Well, interestingly, a top Kamala aide, the granddaughter of Cesar Chavez, is just been appointed Biden's campaign manager. And she, so that actually suggests that they want some type of Kamala-friendly presence in any reelect. But I just want to mention how unpopular President Joe Biden is. The NBC News poll that came out over the weekend has Joe Biden at a 38% approval rating.
Yeah.
And the silver lining for Biden is that Trump is at 34%. But for the incumbent president to be at 38% is awful. And interestingly enough, that 38% approval rating is the same as his approval rating on the economy, mm-hmm. which is also underwater by an incredible margin at 38%. So he's not necessarily starting from a position of strength here. I mean, there's real vulnerability. Right. And I think just to continue my crazy conspiracy theory about the crazy conspiracy theorist RFK Jr., you know, it wasn't RFK's dad didn't get into the primary against LBJ early. It wasn't until Gene McCarthy spooked the Democrats with his surprise showing in New Hampshire in 1968 that RFK got into the race and then forced LBJ's essentially withdrawal from the race. So I think there's with a RFK Jr. type, you just, all he needs to do basically is find a way to get on the debate stage with Biden. And then he'll say something and do something or Biden will be exposed in some way that will lead a significant number of Democrats to say, oh, look at this. He's a Kennedy.
Biden will never debate him.
Right. So that's what's funny, because because there's also there's a parallel question in the Republican primary about whether Trump would debate anybody, know? So neither one of the front runners, actually wants to be in any position where they could be exposed or endangered.
The New York Times pointed out this weekend, that Biden has literally not been interviewed one-on-one by a major newspaper.
Ever in his presidency.
In the course of his presidency. He has been interviewed by 60 Minutes. We remember the 60 Minutes interview where he was walking through the factory. That may be the only one. I mean, a guy who can't be interviewed by a journalist is not going to submit himself to a panel of three journalists who have pent up, even if they are, you know, on his side, who have pent up aggression and many questions to ask that they have not had a chance to ask, even though he has had some press conferences. So there will be no debate. That guy is not going to debate. Why doesn't he do interviews with journalists? Because he cannot be trusted to do interviews with journalists. And when he does press conferences, he says things like Vladimir Putin should be expelled from power, and then has to, you know, spend months backing and filling or having cover. So he is who he is. But here's my take on the Democrat going at him about his cognitive issues. That is the third rail. And in the world of liberal opinion, this is what you will not be allowed to say about Biden, because given the overwhelming odds that should he declare tomorrow, he will be the Democratic nominee in 2024, absent some major health event or something. That's touching the third. That is giving Trump or whoever the rope to hang Biden with. If Trump can run in 2024 by saying even Democrats know that Biden can't be president again, that he's senile, that is too rich a vein to hand. They will be silenced. It will be like when Joaquin Castro tried to make the point that Biden, you know, wasn't cognitively all there during the 2020 campaign and basically was run out of the race for even raising the possibility that Biden had missed a step in an answer. That will be times 1,000 now. So I just don't know that it can be done.
But his age is not at all a third rail. It's strictly speaking about his age. That is. To use a now Bidenism, top of mind among Democrats, according to these polls that sort of drill down on the reasons for his unpopularity. Age comes up over and over and over.
And that's a good proxy, actually, right, for the cognitive. Like, they can say age, but what they really mean is, you know, is he corpus mentis?
Okay, but if he is the likely nominee, you do not want... And Trump is the likely Republican nominee. The dynamic in the Democratic Party will be, we have to treat Biden like he's a hothouse flower, because he's the only thing that stands between us and this guy assuming the presidency. And he will take any weapon at hand, and we cannot hand him any weapons. So all investigative journalism into the Biden administration will be quashed. All efforts to sort of play it right when it comes to stories like the Hunter Biden story or something, all of the pressures that were on in 2019 and 2020 to protect Biden against that, the shields will be 10 times higher. And so this will all have to happen, you know, on the right, in the anti-Biden world, and therefore be dismissed, which can get us now to the big story about...
Let me just make one more comment before we get to that big story, because I think what you're saying is very important. And what it boils down to is Biden needs Trump. He's always needed Trump, right? He needed Trump to win in 2020. He needs Trump to win now. And just another factoid from this NBC News poll, Biden is trailing... a generic Republican presidential candidate by 6 points. And they didn't do head-to-heads, but other recent polls show that head-to-head with an actual candidate, with Trump, Biden wins. With the other Republican, the second-place Republican, Ron DeSantis, DeSantis does a little bit better. Now, DeSantis is a little bit less defined in the public, but it's a different question with DeSantis. It's more up in the air. We can easily see Biden beating Trump, though, of course, there's also the possibility in a 50-50 America, a polarized America, that Trump could pull out an Electoral College victory. My point being, Biden needs Trump because if in the absence of Trump, the type of situation, John, where you're saying that everyone kind of rallies together in order to prevent, you know, what they'll call the end of democracy if Trump wins the second term, won't happen. Now, it will happen a little bit. You know, they hate Republicans in general, but it won't be the same effect. So that's why Biden is desperate for Trump.
Okay, let's get to that story. But before we do, I want to talk to you about a new advertiser today, Babbel. Look, for most of us, learning a second language in high school or college wasn't exactly a high point in our academic careers. I mean, my story is I studied 5 languages in my time in from beginning school through the end of college. And the only language I ended up knowing at all well was French, which I studied in from 3rd to 7th grade. And that's the only one that I retain any memory of. The others have vanished from my consciousness. But that's why I want to talk to you about Babbel, the language learning app that sold more than 10 million subscriptions, because it's an addictively fun and easy way to learn a new language. Whether you'll be traveling abroad, connecting in a deeper way with family, or you just have some free time, Babbel teaches bite-sized language lessons you'll actually use in the real world. It's 15-minute lessons make it the perfect way to learn a new language on the go. They're built around real life. You'll learn how to have practical conversations about travel, relationships, business, and more. Other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, not Babbel. Babbel lessons were created by over 100 language experts with a teaching method that has been scientifically proven to be effective. You can choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, and German. Plus, Babbel speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. There are so many ways to learn with Babbel. In addition to lessons, you can access podcasts, games, videos, stories, and even live classes. Plus, it comes with a 20-day money-back guarantee. So start your new language learning journey today with Babbel. Right now, get up to 55% off your subscription when you go to Babbel. That's Babbel.com/commentary. That's Babbel.com/commentary for up to 55% off your subscription. Babbel, language for life. So the big story, and we have some differences of opinion on how big a story this is, but it's obviously lingering. Former CIA Deputy Director Michael Morell, in October 2020, arranged for the publication of a letter signed by 51 former intelligence officials like him, saying that the Hunter Biden laptop was a creation of Russian disinformation. And the committee looking into the Hunter Biden story, the House committee, got Morell to testify, and Morell said there were two intents. One intent was to share a concern with the American people that the Russians were playing on this issue, and two, it was to help Vice President Biden. Asked why he wanted to help Biden, Morell said, because I wanted him to win the election. Okay, so I'm going to just throw this out, not to monologize, but I'm going to say this. When the story came out, when the Hunter Biden laptop surfaced and it was full of junk and it was, you know, all this, I was like, ooh, man, that's terrible. You know, this is terrible stuff. But it's his son. It's not him. It's about, you know, there's cocaine pictures of him doing cocaine and with hookers in bed and whatever else there was that was sort of emerged at the beginning and some other stuff. And, but, you know, you can't, he's in his late 40s. Like, Biden is not responsible for the horrible personal behavior of his son. And it's not that it's a low blow, but, you know, it's not him. Like, he's not implicated in it. And then a couple of things happen, mainly the suppression of the news stories by social media companies that basically restricted the dissemination of the Hunter Biden laptop story by the New York Post in particular. And this story that emerged the minute that it came out, that it was probably that the laptop had somehow been engineered by the Russian internet geniuses who had won the 2016 campaign for Trump, according to the fantasies of the left. But I think that people really believed that. So the 51 intelligence officials who signed that letter actually thought that it was possible that the laptop could have been manufactured, in which case they acted in innocence. And second, yeah, they wanted Biden to win. And this was an op by the Biden campaign in some fashion or other to protect Biden from the possible consequences of this late hit, because it came out in the third week of October, two or three weeks before the election. And that's to be understood as a political act, and they would have been malpractice for them not to protect him. Okay, so that's my line.
I'm so wound up right now.
And Christina's wound up, and you're all wound up. So I've now thrown this out, and now go at me. Go ahead.
Okay, you're being far too charitable and kind towards these intelligence officials. What they did is very clear. They sold their integrity for a mess of partisan pottage here. They didn't need to do this. First of all, they had seen zero evidence. They did this based on the claim of one guy who, by the way, let's backtrack to 2012. This is the same guy who helped draft the talking points about the Benghazi attack that killed one of our ambassadors, to claim, because we were in a run-up to Obama's re-election, that this was not actually a terrorist attack, despite the fact that it occurred on the anniversary of 9/11, and to downplay that because it would harm Obama's re-election chances, because he was running on the idea that he had defeated these terrorists. So that he's that guy. He did that. He dissembled. He you know, lied. He walked around Capitol Hill with Susan Rice to help her lie. He blamed the FBI when it was actually him at the CIA who did this. So this is the guy we're talking about here. There should have been a sort of healthy skepticism about anything he was claiming, since they didn't see the evidence. Instead, because they proved themselves to be wildly partisan rather than objective members of our intelligence corps, they went all in on it. And then when it was, and one other point I want to make here, because it frustrates me that the Biden laptop story does this, the reason they suppressed it and this remains successful, it wasn't just that it showed him as a parent, you can say, as I agree with you, John, it's sort of horrible to see someone's adult son kind of descend into addiction and all these destructive behaviors. But there was something else on that laptop. And it showed a very strong ties between the Biden family, members of the Biden family, and and Chinese businesses. So by saying, oh, it's Russian disinformation, that was a good bait and switch from what actually was revealed or is claimed to be revealed on this laptop, which is that actually there might be something there that implicates Joe Biden when he was vice president. Did he use his office and his influence to help his son get deals that otherwise wouldn't have happened with a known enemy of the United States? So on both of those scores, I have nothing but contempt for all 51 of those individuals. And it actually feeds, we were talking about conspiracy theories, it feeds the deep state mind, the deep state conspiracy theories that lead to complete erosion of trust and our ability to look at our intelligence officials and expect them to do their job in a nonpartisan way. Okay, rant over.
I agree with everything Christine said. And I think the story has changed so much, the focus of it. It's not a story about the laptop anymore. It is a story about all these attempts to circle the wagons on the part of institutional figures. And if the Mike Morrell and the 50 people the 50 intelligence officials that he got to sign this letter really believed that this was Russian disinformation, with such certainty that they were willing to affix their signatures to a letter saying this, if they believed that based on just saying, yeah, hey, it wasn't us, that in and of itself is a huge problem. What kind of career intelligence figure thinks that? It's the kind of thing where we sort of know there was no evidence for it to be Russian disinformation because it wasn't Russian disinformation. So that is a huge problem in and of itself. I continue to think it ties into the question about the IRS special agent who is overseeing the tax part of the inquiry into the Hunter Biden case. Who through his lawyer has asked for whistleblower protections from Congress because he thinks the case has been politicized and that favoritism.
By Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States.
Yes, the story now is about something much bigger, which is continued and correct distrust of institutions and institutional figures. And I have to say it's also a boon for Trump. It is another one of those events that sort of bear out what he's been preaching for 7-8 years.
Well, Trump's the reason, though, of course, that the story was so mishandled, because there was such fear among Democratic operatives and the press that 2020 would play as a repeat of 2016, that they moved so quickly to label the laptop disinformation, moved so quickly to suppress the story on social media, because they didn't want to get played again as they saw it, right? In 2016, with the press actually working with investigative reporter Peter Schweitzer on Hillary Clinton, in the emails, right? The New York Times early publishing stories about how very damaging to Hillary Clinton. And then, of course, the WikiLeaks exposure in October of 2016. All that came out of that was seen as very damaging to Hillary Clinton. And so the idea was among Democrats, look, we can't allow any information to come out that might increase Donald Trump's chances of winning the presidency. So that's the first part. The second part is the way that Trump himself handled the story. And I think he also shares some part of the blame as to why the story was not widely reported. Because did he spend a lot of time talking about those deals you mentioned between the Biden family and other businesses? No. He spent all of his time, including on the shouting debate, the worst presidential debate in history, the first debate. If you could make it out when the three old men were screaming at each other, but Trump was starting talking about all of the kind of deviant behavior that Hunter was seen as exposed on. He wasn't talking about the lobbying. He wasn't talking about the Biden family clearly has used the father's position in national politics for half a century as a way to enrich themselves. He wasn't talking about that. And so that I think also played a role in that this story wasn't more widely reported at the time or more widely discussed at the time, because it's a big problem for Biden. There are now reports that Hunter's living at the White House. Hunter was by Biden's side for the entirety of their week-long vacation in Ireland earlier this month. The reports of how this re-elect video is coming together suggests that Hunter is now like in the inner circle of Joe Biden's political team. They are intimately connected, not just biologically, but now politically. And so as this story unravels, in particular, the whistleblower, in particular, some of the stuff that James Comer, the head of the House Oversight Committee, is unveiling, as that stuff comes out, it could be a big problem for Biden.
I just want to jump back, because there's one more thing that bothers me about all this. So in that debate, in the worst presidential debate in history, Biden, in defending himself against these Trump attacks, cited this letter of 50 intelligence experts saying that this is Russian disinformation. What are the what went into that?
Tony Blinken went into that.
But no, I know what went into the letter, but did Biden think it was Russian disinformation? Did did Hunter see his own emails and say, oh, that's Russian disinformation, and believe that?
Well, he's lying.
Right.
Biden's been lying about this the whole time.
Well, this is why
it's a huge story. Yes.
Yeah. Right, now we're the old men. Sorry. That's why he doesn't want to talk to the press, too, because those are exactly the kinds of questions an adversarial press would have asked him long ago.
Okay. I'm going to go back to my overly charitable interpretation thing. Not to be overly charitable, but to be more ingenuous about the 50 intelligence officials. What Biden thought about Hunter and what Biden thinks about Hunter is obviously a very complicated issue that we'll never get to the bottom of. That mainstream Democrats and intelligence officials and everybody on the liberal side of the ledger and the anti-Trump side of the ledger came to believe a series of fantastical and fantasy-driven theories about how Trump got to the presidency in the first place through Russian intervention. Theories that were not stilled in their minds by the fact that Robert Mueller was unable to find any such connection that he could indict him on, but the things that he reported, the contacts between the Trump campaign and Russians were in the Mueller report, but that he didn't take action on them, proved that Trump was in fact elected by the Russians, that Trump, you know, had the phone call with Zelensky that proved that he was trying to serve Russian interests. And all this, they believed all this. It's embarrassing that they believed all this. However, anybody who has known people who are wrapped up in the world of intelligence, including intelligence officials, knows that half of them are bat bleep crazy. And half of them, you just don't know. It's like the classic thing about a brilliant person, like half of what they say is brilliant and half is garbage. And problem is you can't tell the difference. This is exactly true of the world of intelligence. Half of them are fantastic. Half of them are bonkers. And the bonkers people often sort of like take precedence and take charge. And so I believe that many of those people on the letter were not cynical. And that they thought, well, the Russians can do it. They have these, look, they got Trump elected in 2016 and Hillary was ahead by 18 points in Wisconsin or, you know, whatever it was. Like some nefarious thing went on here. It's not to defend them. It's to say that I don't know that this is that big a story. Or let's put it this way. We have two sides. It is going to be a huge story on our side. It will be unknown to their side. It remains relatively unknown to their side. My guess is if you went out on the street, not in Washington or New York, but you went on the street in Chicago and you tapped seven liberals and you said, what do you think of the Michael Morell letter? And they would say, what Michael Morell letter? But if you tapped seven people, you know, who were committed conservatives, you know, on a street in Montgomery, Alabama, six of them would know about the Morell letter already. So we're going to have this bifurcated world in which this is a huge story on Fox for a year, and it's a huge story on the right, and everybody is interested in it, and there will be radio silence about it. So will it work? Will it help? No, it may help because it will give ballast. It means no matter what, that we're not going to be able to dismiss the Comer committee the way I think Democrats wanted the Comer committee to be dismissible. There's more there, and he is not being crazy, irresponsible, or reckless in his rhetoric or the way he's handling it, nor by the way is Jim Jordan, who of course just won this victory against Alvin Bragg by saying, I'm subpoenaing a private citizen who once worked for the Manhattan DA's office, who wrote a book about his behavior at the Manhattan DA's office, criticizing the Manhattan DA. And the Manhattan DA sued a member of Congress to prevent him from exercising his powers to subpoena a private citizen. The case was just dismissed in the most, if you read the judge's opinion, it's head spinning, like the contempt and loathing that the judge displayed for the brief submitted by Bragg's team from the very august firm of Gibson, Dunn and Crutcher, by the way, which is really great for them. Congratulations to Gibson, Dunn and Crutcher for writing one of the most embarrassing briefs in American, you know, legal history. I just think it's a sort of stunning factoid. But this is where the scenario that I laid out in the first part of the podcast comes in. Hundreds of millions of people are not going to know that any of this happened. So I don't know. Am I wrong or will it penetrate?
I mean, I think it will be a part of any Republican campaign against Joe Biden in 2024. I think you'll see ads talking about the deals to the degree that Comer's able to get more information about them. If this whistleblower case goes forward, I think there's a potential there to have the story break out of kind of the Fox News silo. But ultimately, it's going to be up to the Republican nominee to press the case that, Biden, and here I'm kind of just assuming this voice, you know, Biden's failed leadership is a consequence of his 50 years in politics, where he's been much more interested in improving his family's fortunes than in actually finding solutions for the American people, right? Now, what I just said is not what Donald Trump is going to say. Donald Trump is going to say, the hookers, the cocaine, it's embarrassing, you know, and then Biden is going to start screaming at him and saying, you know, don't talk about my son. Don't, I'll fight you now. Trump
will say you're a rapist.
But smart Trump, if Trump were, I agree with Matt. I think he's just going to go for the hookers and the blow, because really, who wouldn't, right? That's the storyline for him, for someone like Trump. But he could say instead, remember, Biden was elected as the steadying hand, the non-Trump. He's trying to run. He's likely going to run on that again. The attack against him is, well, he ran as the steadying hand. But what we now know from all this evidence is that, in fact, he's corrupt and he's old and he's used, like, and the economy's tanking. I mean, you could still go at him without going after Hunter, because I agree. Look, Hunter's his adult child. But what that entire Biden family has done to profit from Joe Biden's service, that's something that should be discussed by the public.
I'd like to just point out on the show that the steadying hand has now closed his third U.S. embassy.
Yes.
I mean, he's doing great. Yep. You know, Afghanistan,
now
Kyiv,
a terrorist staging
Kyiv,
ground again.
And now Sudan. I mean, because the Kyiv embassy's reopened. So maybe it's only 2.5, I'll give him. But that's quite a record to be proud of, President Biden.
There's a moment toward the end of The Blues Brothers, the 1980 film with John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd. All the plot revolves around the Blues Brothers attempting to get $5,000 to save an orphanage from foreclosure, which is a pretty funny plot device. Actually, who forecloses on an orphanage? But nonetheless, they want to raise this money. And by the end of the movie, the entire city of Chicago, from Nazis to ex-girlfriends to everything, is just going after the Blues. But there's a moment when a police dispatcher announces that the use of excessive violence against the Blues Brothers has been approved. I analogize this to the spirit and the emotional force with which that idea is present when it comes to Donald Trump's third presidential campaign. All bets are off. You think that he didn't get a fair shake, if you're the sort of person who thinks he didn't get a fair shake in 2016 or during his presidency or during 2020, but you didn't like what happened after the election. You know, you think he was he lost the election and all of that, and you don't like the way he behaved. you're going to see things from tomorrow onward, from April 25th onward, in an effort to ensure or attempt to ensure that he will not achieve the presidency, both in relation to him and in relation to Biden, that will make those efforts in the past look like a hootenanny. And I don't know what they're going to be, but they're going to be very, very, very determined, because that, in the minds of many people, is the worst possible thing that could happen. And whatever skepticism you have about Biden and his age, or whatever fear you have about Biden, or that Kamala might be president, you don't like her, whatever ideological problem you might have with Biden for not being progressive enough, that end is so important that I think it will blot out the sun. And so a lot of this stuff is going to come up, and it's going to be this incredible experience we're going to have. We are going to know details and particulars about the Biden administration's misbehavior, Biden's misbehavior, his family's misbehavior, that a lot of people we know who do not share ideological predilections will not know about. And it's going to be very frustrating to have conversations with people, with other, if you think it was bad before, maintaining your relationships with people that you don't agree with, man, it, this just, you know, get ready, because it's going to be way worse. You're just going to be like, what do you mean you don't know about Tony Bobulinski?
This is why the Hunter Biden story is important, whether or not it penetrates beyond the right. Because if the campaign is going to be, again, if the campaign to bury Trump is going to be the way that you characterize it, John, and I think it is, that all bets are off. And if Trump loses against Joe Biden, well, the response is also going to be worse than what we have seen on the side of the Trump supporters.
Oh man,
because they will have more and more reason to say this was all nonsense.
It's all rigged. It's right. It's all rigged anyway.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, you know what's not rigged? I'll tell you what's not rigged. The comfort and pleasure that you can take from Boll & Branch sheets. Boll & Branch sheets are just, they're the best. You've heard me talk about it so many times. You wake up feeling refreshed with the softest, most luxurious sheets from Boll & Branch. The bedding expert. They make the highest quality sheets with incredible craftsmanship. Each sheet set, slow made for an unmatched softness with a 100% traceable organic cotton that gets softer with every wash. They're made without toxins. They're free from synthetic pesticides, formaldehyde, and other harsh chemicals. And they fit the deepest of mattresses and are labeled with top and bottom tags, so making your bed is easier than ever. 10 versatile colors in all sizes, from twin up to California King. And best of all, Boll & Branch gives you a 30-night risk-free guarantee with free shipping and returns on all U.S. orders. So sleep better at night with Boll & Branch sheets. Get 15% off your first order when you use promo code commentary at BOLLANDBRANCH.com. That's Boll & Branch. Again, BOLLANDBRANCH.com. Promo code commentary. Exclusions apply. See site for details. Okay, so co-host choice, where do we go from here? What do we want to talk about now? We got a whole bunch of things we could talk about. Do we want to talk about China and COVID? Do we want to talk about, I don't know, the ongoing effort to characterize Ukraine war as a failure because of one leak?
Is there anything to say about what's happening in Sudan? Is that this, you know, the Sudan, we have this situation where there are more than 10,000 American citizens or dual nationals in Sudan at the moment, as the basically the military government, which took over, is now descending into a civil war, which led to Biden's evacuation of the embassy over the weekend and the SEAL Team 6 basically exfiltrating our embassy personnel. It seems like a rather big deal to me. And one of those issues that like people don't pay any attention to until all of a sudden you have dead Americans and people are calling for more concerted intervention. And it's also in the context of an Africa where obviously America has become more involved over the last 20 years in order to fight Islamic terrorism. But more recently, Russia is, doing what Russia does best, sow chaos by giving evil people weapons and saying, you know, go for broke. And so there are places like Chad in Africa, where apparently the Wagner group is attempting a coup or trying to lay the foundations for a coup. It seems to me, again, just a reminder that, everyone in this country apparently just wants to ignore the world. Blah, 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 blah. I don't care. Let's go look at the cat videos on TikTok. Let's watch The Real Housewives and all, 20 versions of it now. I think that they're just creating a 21st version. You know, Real Housewives Biloxi is coming to a screen near you. Blah, 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 blah. But at any moment, the world can rise up and bite you. And I'm afraid that might happen in Sudan in the coming weeks.
But the playbook for the Biden administration up until this weekend, when we found out that they were evacuating people at the embassy, was very much what it was in the lead up to the Afghanistan withdrawal, too. It was the press secretary sort of shrugging, going, well, if there are people there, they should have known to get out. We've had this stage 4 warning for a long time. So, you know, they're kind of on their own. And I remember I sent this to you guys over the weekend, or I think it was Friday. I was so outraged. Like, it just struck me because I heard her say that and I thought, if there's one thing as an American that you hope for, if you happen to be overseas and get caught out in a terrible situation, and maybe you forgot to check the warnings, you didn't realize things were deteriorating, maybe you're a missionary or work for an NGO and were helping people and wanted to stay and continue to help those people as long as possible, you really have to hope that your country has your back in those situations. And yes, we can't always successfully extract all of our citizens, but at least we pretend that that's what we want to do. And this cavalier disregard of Americans overseas in peril really angered me. And the thing is, they could have the same exact policy in terms of not trying to get these folks out of there. But what she should have said as an American is, we're very concerned about their safety. We're doing everything we can to help them. That's even if they're not, like, there was something really awful about her cavalier disregard of these Americans overseas, as if, well, they got themselves into that mess, they're on their own. I didn't like it. And I feel like that's actually been an attitude the Biden administration has demonstrated in a number of foreign conflicts. And they are relying on exactly what you said, Matt, that Americans don't care about this stuff. Unless it becomes a war, we have to send troops. They just are tuning it out.
In 1904, there was an incident in Africa, in Morocco, when a Greek American named Ion Perdicaris was kidnapped by a warlord named Ahmed al-Raisuni. And a huge international incident occurred where John Hay, the Secretary of State to Teddy Roosevelt, informed, Roosevelt was running for re-election. It was the Republican National Convention in 1904. And Hay said, the United States government wants Perdicaris alive or Raisuli dead. This was one guy, obviously a much different world situation. And Teddy Roosevelt was a much different person. He was kidnapped, Perdicaris, as a financial matter and whatever. Anyway, much of the debate that went on in relation to him was whether he was in fact a U.S. citizen or not. And it was determined that he was, and the kidnapping was resolved with him alive. I only bring this up to say that there are ways in which the United States government can and have over the past said to penny ante countries like Sudan, don't screw with our people or you will live to regret the consequences. And we have a press secretary for the president of the United States saying, Well, it's their own fault if they get killed in the middle of a Sudanese, kidnapped or killed in the middle of a Sudanese civil war. And I think, Matt, you're right that people don't care. But they can come to care if that attitude isn't fixed. I think that was a big blunder on her part. I think that was an unforced error. Like, anybody could have told you, you're not supposed to say when an American is in danger abroad.
So bad at her job. So bad at her job.
That, like, well, you know, they should have left earlier. Like, it's really, how about if that were your mother, Karine Jean-Pierre?
Well, but she's going on what they said in Afghanistan, which is something very similar. There was all these repeated, you know, State Department, you know, issued all these warnings to be, and then at some point, when you know, on the umpteenth day, when Americans couldn't get out, the State Department spokesman or the White House spokesman said, "Well, look, they've been warned. You know, we told them to be where they were supposed to be, and if they weren't there, they weren't there."
You know, John, the most interesting thing about that story you mentioned is that Raisuli had a Scottish accent, or at least he did when he was portrayed by Sean Connery.
Yeah, that's right.
In the wonderful,
and Pedicaris was played by Candace Bergen. Yes, that's a movie called The Wind and the Lion.
Yes, one of my favorite movies.
John Milius,
Dick Force, written John and directed Milius by John
finest,
Milius.
But yeah,
that,
work, yes.
that is one of the more humorous moments, is when Raisuli shows up and he goes, I got you, Pedicaris. It's like, oh, is that what he sounded like? And America got Pedicaris back, by the way.
Yes, who ended up moving to England. So the whole thing it's a very weird and interesting story. Yes, and it's turned into this weird thing where Pedicaris is a woman, and so all of that. But nonetheless, yes. I don't know. There isn't much to be said about what, you know, there isn't much to be said in our frame about who should win and who should lose.
Well, it's a bizarre story because, you know, just recently there was a Democratic, the Bashir, the longtime Islamist autocrat of Sudan, collapsed. That government collapsed, and there was a brief democratic experiment, mm-hmm. which then ended with this military government, of which now, like, the special forces have decided to lay claim. And so it's a sad, example of how fragile democracy is. But it's also leading to this complicated situation where you know, we've removed our embassy personnel, but there are American citizens there. And I just one just final point is, it's interesting, you know, I mean, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, when he wrote The United States in Opposition for Commentary in 1975, he said, you know, one of the reasons that America can't ignore foreign policy is because of our multi-ethnic society. And it is just a fact that now, you know, we have more Sudanese in the United States. I mean, they're not a huge population, but there are more Sudanese immigrants to the United States. Definitely there are more immigrants from the Horn of Africa to the United States. One of them is a very prominent, awful congresswoman from Minnesota. So as a result, though, I think you will find unexpectedly these issues pop up where suddenly people are making an issue of what is happening in Sudan, in a way in which, you know, even 15 years ago or 20 years ago, people wouldn't have bothered with who's running Sudan because, one, it wasn't a primary American interest, and two, we didn't have Americans from there who have personal connections and a personal interest in the future of that region.
And it's interesting because it's not an electoral matter. I mean, I just looked it up, and there are, I think, 60,000 Sudanese in the United States. So it's not like they're going to turn a congressional district.
Right.
But not only are there many more, but we're a multi-ethnic country, and so there are people who have ties and connections elsewhere and have to, like, go visit elderly relatives, particularly if a war is coming. I mean, and, you know, try to help them or something like that. But then to treat them as though they are somehow a bother, it's not even that, you know, you're trying to say, look, the world is a complicated and difficult place, and we cannot protect everybody. The United States cannot protect every single American citizen who travels abroad. There are too many people out, too many places they're free to go wherever they want. And, you know, they're taking a risk if they go certain types of places. and all we can do is warn them and all that. But you can't treat them as though they're a bother, as though I'm annoyed to be asked about what you're going to do about the Sudanese. I mean, you can, but there should be consequences for it. And I it's hard to know, again, in a world in which, you know, the only person standing between Donald Trump and the presidency is Joe Biden. Again, no one's going to be making huge amounts of hay about this in the mainstream media, because they don't need to hand Biden problems that he won't be able to answer. By the way, before we close, I do want to mention one thing, because Matt, you said that Hunter is living in the White House and is traveling with him and all of that. And there can only be one reason for this, which is that he's more infirm than we realize, and that he needs Jill or Hunter with him 24 hours a day to be an intermediary, not only with the press or whatever, but with his own staff.
His staff, yeah.
With his own people, so that there is a person to translate and say things, because he may not make all that much sense. And there was footage of him on the trip doing the stuff that we've seen footage of before, where he walks the wrong way or he doesn't seem to know where he's going, and see Hunter grabbing his elbow and steering him in the other direction. And yeah, I mean, if Biden is so bad off that he needs Hunter, his most, you know, the most the person who could, you know, literally maybe be the one person aside from himself who could deny him the presidency in 2024, he needs him close, because for some reason Jill has other has other things she has to do when they're on international trips,
right? And at this point, you know, pretty soon the only Biden who won't be living in the White House is President Biden, because
well, he'll be at the
granddaughter's also living there, I think, with her now husband. And now you got Hunter and that family. And so really, I guess he has,
these are,
I guess,
all adults.
President Biden has to make room for all of his progeny. And so that's why he basically spends his time outside the White House, either in Delaware or Camp David.
Can I just say on top of this, that this is why I think Mark Halperin's gut suspicion that Biden will still somehow not end up being running the Democratic nominee remains operational.
Okay. I think that is fair. I don't think it's going to interrupt his effort to, by the way, this is the one thing about this is he can declare that he is running for the presidency, right? And he can pull out.
Right.
Like Johnson look, Hubert Humphrey only
they
lost.
They can plan for that.
Hubert Humphrey only lost in 1968 by a whisker's breath. And there was a third party candidate that took 13% of the vote. Like, this is no joke. You know, Biden can pull out. In whole point is, if he were to pull out in October, November, December, and there's an open thing, everybody starts from the same. You know, it's like, well, you can't do that. They have to get a team together to run in the primaries. But if nobody has a team together, then everybody starts from the same ground zero.
Oh, you know Gavin's got a team. You know Gavin's got a team just waiting for that call.
Okay, well, I you know what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, they can't be out raising money. They can't be out hiring staff. They can't do that, you know, in that way logistically. And so there's no real deficit. In fact, you could also make the case that there's a benefit to that, which is that, you know, you don't have this horrible year of campaigning that gets everybody down and depressed by the time the convention rolls around and everybody's sick of everything. So I don't know. Yes, he could still bow out, but he is obviously running. And again, I think people should be aware. I've said this before, that when these moments come, when he has to make a showing for himself, Biden generally steps up to the plate and clears whatever the bar is. And people shouldn't, you know, this hope that everybody had who didn't want Biden to be president, whether they were in the Democratic primaries or in the general election, that he was going to do the thing, like the Rick Perry moment where he was going to have a brain fart, or he would fall off the stage or whatever. If anything like that, you shouldn't, that's an exogenous thing. You can hope for it, and, you know, it's probably not going to happen. So this will, you know, it's going to be a whole, we're not going to get out of this that easily, is what I'm saying. We're not getting out of Trump easily, and we're not getting out of Biden easily. And that's the world that we have come to here in the 247th year of America's existence. So we should just all, you know, understand that the thing to hope for is that life is long and America is long, and this too shall pass. And it will, but it might not pass until 2028. Anyway, with that, we'll be back tomorrow. So for Christine and Matt, I'm John Pomeritz. Keep the candle burning.